Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Welcome to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford, your co-host.
And Stas Ciolkowski, the other co-host.
And today is Monday, October 28th, and we're about to start telling stories.
All right.
It's almost Halloween. It is. So our theme today is
ghost scary stories.
And I think we have some good ones lined up.
I hope so.
But I do want to do our usual... Well, first we have to thank Andy Offutter for allowing us to use his original composition, Tarry Here. And every time I hear it, I think of being in workshops or listening to Andy tell stories and how much fun that is. So we do appreciate that. But we also want to talk about the week behind us, because some interesting things happened. You were going to say something else?
I was going to say, when I hear that song, and I sometimes play it on YouTube at home and listen to it, because it makes me think of actually sitting on someone's porch and think of my parents, who used to sit on the front stoop on Saturday night sometime with neighbors, and... just sit there and gab. I'm sure they were telling stories that I wish I had paid attention to. But I was busy running around. So I don't ever think about Andy.
Huh.
Which, you know, I mean, if someone said, like, mentioned something that would provoke a thought about Andy, I might. But otherwise, I really do just let it be the message.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit and listen to the good stories.
Yeah.
And they're all good stories.
Well, I just like listening to him tell stories. I like listening to him sing and make music, and all of that takes me back to those places. Mm. Yesterday, I was at the Ravenwood Renaissance Fair with an E, first time ever, brand new festival in Winchester, Virginia. I was telling stories for part of the time and watching an amazing collection of eccentric and hilariously attired people cool. circumnavigate the fairgrounds in Frederick County, Virginia. Lots of interesting people, both performing and in the audience. Guy named Michael Rosman calls himself Squire on a Wire.
Oh.
Squire on the Wire.
Cool.
So he's a kind of an acrobat and juggler, mostly juggler, but he also does high wire feats. And he brought his own high wire contraption with him. So he was 7 feet off the ground for part of his performance. But what was really fun was his patter. So he does exactly the same show each time as much as he can. But of course, he's a different person at 5 in the evening than he was at 10 in the morning. And so the show is a little bit different. And listening to him explain things and bring people up to help him. And he was just a hoot. It was a lot of fun.
Good.
And there were musical acts and... there were lots of musicians, a couple bands, and I just had a wonderful time. And just people watching. You could just park yourself in a corner. And
what was the music like?
It was a wide range. There were Renaissance players. There was a circus-type troupe that had almost ragtime music.
Wow.
Accompaniment. Okay. And I guess circusy music, but you know, 20th century circusy music, not really Renaissance music.
I have a question. People dressed up, was everyone dressed up in Renaissance?
No.
some of them were like robots and some of them
were... Well, it was Halloween. So there were lots of people, especially children, in Halloween costumes. Right. And there were some adults in Halloween costumes. Yeah. But also just people's interpretation of what a Renaissance costume looks like
is
bizarre right. in some... I mean, you can, if you stare at them for a while, you can figure out how they got there. But yeah. Not what you would expect to find necessarily if you went back in time. And I got lots of compliments on my outfit, which was actually one of my storytelling outfits. I took it to get dressed for the Renaissance Fair. I took about 25, 35 pieces of clothing out of my closet and hung them around my bedroom and then walked around and put things together. And I came up with two or three different options. And after looking at all of those people, I realized I have two or three more options that I could have worn.
So, did anyone take your picture?
You know, my husband asked me the same thing. He texted me halfway through the day and I thought, oh, I haven't done that. And I was going to do it for the final performance, but my final performance was canceled because... So I had three performances scheduled on various stages in various places around the fair. And at the end, it was cold there. The wind was fierce all day long. Of course, we had that terrific rainstorm in the morning at my house in Hagerstown. We got an inch and a half of rain in a couple hours, like two. I mean, it was really pouring really hard when I was loading my car, trying to carry an umbrella at the same time that I'm loading everything I needed into the car, and wrapped up your sound system in plastic to get it to the car without getting everything wet. So...
Did the sound system work?
The sound system worked perfectly. Right. It was really good.
Did you have any trouble with the stand?
No trouble with anything. The only difficulty I had at all was at the very end of the festival. So I started to tell you about the very end of the festival, but I'll do that in a minute. In answer to your question, that last performance on the big stage where I was supposed to be, I got bumped to the picnic table pavilion because the circus troupe was going to be put on the main stage, which was as it should be. They were wonderful, and they should have been there. There were many kids. There were some teenagers in that troupe, and they were really talented. But so they were, for some reason, they were looking for a Bluetooth connection, and they knew I had a sound system. So there were people following me around. Several people asked me several times if my sound system had a Bluetooth option. And I said I had no idea, but I couldn't let them try because I had promised my radio partner that we would not touch any dials.
Right.
On the equipment, and so they could not have it.
What a good partner you are.
And, you know, as I'm watching them scurry all over the fairgrounds trying to find Bluetooth connection, I'm getting more and more anxious, and I finally get to the point where I understand that my choice is I can call Stosh and ask him if these people can use his equipment.
No.
And I knew that if I called you, I could talk you into it, but you would never forgive me.
you could not talk me into that.
Well, I was not going to do it, but I was so relieved when they came up with another option and I was off the hot seat. I mean, they were treating me as if I knew my equipment.
Yes.
And of course, I did not at all know my equipment.
I'm glad you were able to work that through easily.
Yes, I did.
Because often that's a thing that I find wrong with performers. Either have what you need or don't do it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I did not have, which I meant to have, it just slipped my mind in the pouring rain, was the extension cord. And I needed an extension cord, which they provided.
Yeah,
that was not outside of their capacity.
Yeah.
But next time it will be on my list instead of just in my head.
Right.
What I wanted to tell you about the end of the day was that so this troupe, this of acrobats and musicians and jugglers and kind of storytellers too. They had interesting patter. Mm-hmm. They were on the main stage, and when when I went to set up in the picnic table pavilion, which is where I had performed the other two times, to people eating or just relaxing, but it went really well, and I was content. When I went to do that the third time, we realized, as I was walking around with the festival coordinators, that there was no one else to come and hear me. Everyone was up there at the main stage with the acrobats. So I didn't get to do my final performance and didn't get a picture since I didn't pay attention earlier. Mm. But this will happen again, so it's fine.
Or you could get dressed up at home and Jose could take
and pretend
picture.
And lie into the camera.
No. Just have Jose take your picture.
Yeah. Well, it's not the outfit. I mean, I've worn the outfit many times, so it's fine. Okay, so do you want to talk about speak or do you want to talk about your week?
My week was boring, I think.
No.
Yeah.
You don't have any boring weeks.
No.
Well, I know you went to a fascinating party on Saturday night.
Saturday, I went to a great party.
And you told stories there.
A bit, yes. And I had a great experience because for the first part of the party, I disappeared. I was sitting on a couch and I talked to one of the men. I can't remember his name. I have to hear names a lot in order to remember. And anyway, we had a conversation, but we were completely out of the conversation with the other men. They were reliving their old days when they were teens. And they, at the end of the party, I actually did tell them that I had a great childhood and youth, but I did not have anything like they did. And I was a bit jealous.
They were telling bad boy stories.
Oh, and I love the way they framed it. A number of times they said things like, it was good boys doing bad things, which is, when you do bad things, you're a bad boy. There is no good boys.
That's because you grew up with a mom who made that perfectly clear.
Absolutely. And so did my teachers. But anyway, at first, I couldn't relate to anything at all that they were talking about. And your husband, Jose, is such a good person. Twice he tried to get me in by saying something that he knew about me. However, in both cases, the one guy that you can imagine who it was ignored what Jose had said and just kept on going.
I'm thinking that was Mike Evans who was going to come to the Renaissance.
I wasn't going to say his name, but because he seemed to be the grand dame of the grand whatever you would.
Poobah
of the thing. And it wasn't until we were sitting at the table after eating and having dessert that I was able to strike a chord with him, since there was something that I knew.
Oh, that was a different guy, because Mike Evans wasn't at the table with us.
He came and stood there for a while.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And so anyway, it was really a good party.
Well, it's a room full of storytellers.
Yeah.
So that's why when you came for the first time a year or two ago, and those guys, those raconteurs who love to tell their glory day stories, they were sidling up to me and saying, "Who is that guy who's holding forth at the head of the table for 2 hours?"
Well, if you noticed, I didn't sit at the head of the
table. No, I did notice that.
Just on purpose, because I didn't want to get a reputation or something. But, I'm only I'm only good in a crowd or in a conversation in a party or something if the topics come up that I that I know about, and I usually know about lots of them, but
you had no experience throwing firecrackers out of a convertible or into a convertible.
No, and, yeah. I lived a demure childhood as far as those things. We didn't, we ran in the streets and played ball and stuff like that. Well, we didn't do those things. At least
really
my brother did. My brother Tony is 3 years older. He would have sat there and regaled them with incredible feats of nonsense, which was just his daily repertoire. Almost.
I can't believe that we're 15 minutes into the program and we have not gotten to anything we planned. This is just fun.
We're interesting.
Yes. So. Well, you're listening to the to us. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Okowska.
And now we should mention Speak. You should mention Speak.
Speak Story Series. And if you're looking for information for this, at speakstoryseries.com, you can find all kind of great stuff. And they'll answer you if you write questions to them.
Yeah.
And have a,
very helpful people.
Yes. So we're down to the last of the season. On November 12th, Bill Harley, who will bring his guitar and sing us some songs, and there will be story songs, and he will just delight the audience.
And make everyone laugh.
Every place he
A charming man.
Yes. And that's on November 12th. And so if you haven't been before, you should come.
And at that November 12th session, will they be announcing next year's Tellers?
No.
Oh.
I don't think so. There was some discussion of that, but Adam does not like to reveal who's coming next year until he has
signed contracts.
Signed contracts. because and I agree with him. I think he and I get along so well because I have some of the same thoughts. I'd like to know what ducks I'm going to be shooting at,
right?
You know, instead of guessing it and saying, well, maybe we'll have this or that and the other thing. So, but he does already have a great lineup for next year.
Yeah, so I hear.
That he's polishing, and we'll know about it. I'm pretty sure we're going to have a fundraiser like we did earlier mm-hmm. this year.
Great.
And when we do, we'll know about that lineup.
Okay. Well, every year has been stunning from my perspective. Yep,
you bet.
Yeah. Wonderful. And so, and Bill Harley's at Reynolds Hall, right?
Reynolds Hall.
On November 12th. Okay. Right. SpeakStoryseries.com for more information.
Right.
Okay. Well, do you want to do a story?
I do.
Please.
I'm going to do a story. I got a new bunch of stories from Tim Tingle.
Hmm.
These are stories from a book called Texas Ghost Stories. And in reading them, I haven't read all of them, but in reading them, I've come across a number of them who that are versions of different stories. One of them that I might, if we have time, and we probably won't today, there's a story about Mr. Fox in here, which is different in some details from the Mr. Fox that I normally tell.
Is this a Native American story?
No, it's it's told not Native American. These are stories from the West.
Okay.
Some of them do come from Native American, but these are not. The one I'm talking about, like Mr. Fox, is Mr. Fox is one of those old stories. In fact, it's mentioned in a Shakespeare play.
Huh.
It goes back to be that old. In one of the plays in Shakespeare, there is a line or two that mentions that story about Mr. Fox. And that's all it said, a line like that. And when I first started in storytelling, I remember I was fascinated by the story Mr. Fox because it's a real harsh story.
Hmm.
And there was a note attached to the book I had about the Mr. Fox and that it was mentioned in Shakespeare. So that story has to be at least 400 years old because Shakespeare was dead 400 years ago. And he had passed away by the time his anniversary of his death would have been about 4 years ago, I think. Anyway, this is another story that is a very similar to one that I know, and it's called Macario. Long ago in the hills to the south lived a woodcutter named Macario, a simple man who spent his days in the forest cutting wood and his evenings with his wife and 8 children. His wife did her best to provide for the family. She tried gardening to supplement Macario's meager income. She planted squash and beans and melons. Insects and rabbits were grateful and often dined by moonlight at Macario's house. One summer, after a long and arduous day of cutting and carrying wood, Macario sat down to his evening meal of pinto beans. His wife placed the pot in front of him, saying, "Fill your plate first, Macario, for you have worked all day." Dipping his spoon in the pot, Macario looked up at his children. Eight pairs of hungry eyes met his gaze. Macario pushed the pot aside and watched his children scramble for their meal. When eight eager spoons completed their scraping, Macario poured the leftover juice onto his plate. Once more, Macario went to bed with almost nothing to eat. But Macario had a dream. Someday he would have a turkey. An entire turkey, all to himself. It was a simple dream, but Macario was a simple man, and one night he told his wife the dream. Unknown to Macario, his wife saved pennies for a year. On the day of his birthday, in the dark hour before the hint of dawn, Macario's dream came true. "Wake up, Macario," said his wife. In her arms, she held a turkey, dripping with grease. "Here is your turkey. I cooked it for you. But you must run. The children will soon be up, and they will smell the turkey." "Run, Macario, run." She dropped the turkey on Macario's chest. Macario wrapped his arms around the turkey and fled into the woods, barefoot and frightened by the treasure in his arms. Soon he came to a most secret place, a thick and ancient tree deep in the forest. Macario sat down, leaned against a tree trunk, and pulled a leg from the turkey. He closed his eyes and was about to enjoy the first bite. Then he opened one eye, just to be certain he was alone, and there he saw, coming down the path, a woman dressed in blue, surrounded by golden stars. The light of heaven shone around her face. "Macario," she said, "I have come from such a distance. Please share a bite with me." Macario did not hesitate. "You ask me for some of my turkey. For 7 years I have prayed to you, asking that my wife bear no more children. And 7 times I've been denied. No, you cannot have my turkey, not even a bite. Ask my wife. It's her prayers you answer." In a puff and a flash, the woman was gone. Macario, his mouth now watering, returned to his turkey. He closed his eyes and drew the turkey near. Then he opened one eye, just to be certain he was alone. He was not. Slowly, approaching came a thin man, a very thin man, dressed in white rags. Macario's eyes were drawn to the dark holes in his palms and side. "Macario," the man said, "it has been years since I have eaten. Please share your turkey with me." Macario wasn't impressed. "If you have not eaten in years, that would be your own fault, not mine. Your churches are filled with gold. Ask the man who built them for your supper, not a poor woodcutter like myself. No, you cannot have my turkey." In a gust of dark wind, the man was gone. "Now let that be the last," said Macario, closing his eyes and lifting the turkey leg to his mouth. But then he opened one eye, just to be certain he was alone. At first he saw nothing. He took a bite. A bone lodged in his throat. He began to lose his breath. His head felt dizzy. Looking up, he saw 2 eyes floating down the path, eyes like fiery coals. The wind howled, and a man in long black robes stepped from the shadows. "Macario." "Ah, my friend," said Macario, "what brings you here?" "You, Macario, I come for you." The stranger said that. Well, you are always welcome, Death. Yes, I have the most respect for you. For you, unlike the others, treat everyone the same. Rich or poor, you come to take us all." "Kind of you to say so, Macario." "Thank you, my friend. And while you're here, please share my turkey with me. I hate to eat alone when one as fine as you is in my company." And saying that, Macario tore a leg of meat from the bird and handed it to Death. Well, I think it's been 10,000 years since my last meal. Thank you, Macario, I believe I will. And so the two, Macario the woodcutter and Death the Avenger, shared their meal in silence. When he had devoured his piece of turkey, Death rose slowly. It is time to go, Macario. So soon? Said Macario. Oh, well, if you must go, but stop by next time you're in the neighborhood. Macario? Yes? You are coming with me. I think I'd rather not, said Macario. Hearing this, Death pulled down his hood to let Macario see his hideous face. Macario, your time is nigh, Death boomed. No need to raise your voice, said Macario. Unable to contain himself in the face of Macario's good humor, Death sat down and pulled the wing from the turkey. All right, Macario. Then we shall play a game. I think it would amuse me. You know, Macario, the life of Death has far too little humor. Death took a small bottle from his cloak and handed it to Macario. Macario saw it was filled with a dark liquid. This bottle contains a special healing potion, Macario. With it, you can cure any illness known to man. Here is how it works. You must first clear everyone out of the sick room. When you're alone with the patient, I will appear. If I stand at the foot of the bed, simply touch a drop of this liquid to the forehead of the sick, and he will be cured. But if I stand at the head of the bed, Macario, there is nothing you can do. The patient will die. Would you like to play the game? Yes, said a very relieved Macario, closing his eyes and clutching the bottle. A cold wind whirled, and when Macario looked up, he was alone. That evening, as he approached his village, Macario saw a crowd gathering at his uncle's home. He could see by the weeping and mingling of mourners that his uncle was dying. He moved through the crowd to his uncle's bedside. The old man was pale and barely breathing. Everyone out, said Macario. And even Macario was surprised when everyone obeyed. He closed the door behind him and turned to see Death standing at the foot of the bed, nodding with approval. Macario touched his finger to the mouth of the bottle and applied a drop of liquid to his uncle's forehead. Immediately, Death vanished, and the old man opened his eyes. It's good to see you, Macario, said his uncle. But why am I in bed? Macario only smiled and opened the door. A dozen curious eavesdroppers tumbled into the room. Seeing the uncle sitting up and smiling, they knelt and crossed themselves in wonder at the miracle. Word quickly spread of Macario's healing powers. Soon people brought their sick from miles away, first from neighboring villages and then from the coast and the mountains. I cannot promise a cure, Macario told them all. I only promise to treat everyone the same. You pay only what you think your life is worth, and if I fail, you owe me nothing. And many times Macario did fail, for Death must claim his due. That is the way of life. But Macario was humble. Families grieved, but no one blamed Macario, and oftentimes even families of the dead left payment in memory of their loved one. When the miracle liquid worked its magic, they paid Macario well, so well, in fact, that Macario soon built a bigger house, then a bigger one still. And his 8 children? What became of them? They finally left Macario and his wife in peace. For those 8 children attended 8 private schools of learning in 8 different European countries. Macario was rich beyond belief. His fame even spread to the city of the emperor, whose daughter lay deathly ill. Specialists from around the world were called for their opinions. They all agreed the girl would die. And then Macario received a call from the emperor. For the first time, he boarded a train to travel to a patient's sick bed. Arriving in the capital city, Macario was exhausted by the journey, but he was hurried to the palace of the emperor. As he stood in the hallway outside the daughter's room, Macario paused and whispered a silent prayer. A strong hand interrupted his prayer, and Macario whirled around. There stood the emperor. "So you are the famed Macario," he said. Macario simply nodded. "Hear this, Macario. I want nothing of your miracle cures. Your being here is my wife's affair. But I will tell you this. If my daughter dies, you follow her. And not only you, but every member of your family will be burned at the stake for the witches that you are. Now, go and heal my daughter." The emperor left, and Macario fell to his knees in the hallway. To be burned at the stake was the most horrible of curses. It would mean that none of Macario's children or their children forever after could enter the kingdom of heaven. Macario shuddered. He reached for the doorknob and entered the room, crawling on his knees in supplication. Death waited for him at the head of the bed. "No! Please, my family does not deserve this. Spare them. Let this child live." "You know the rules, Macario," said Death. "I will do anything." "There is only one thing you can do, Macario." "Then I will gladly do it." "Come with me now," said Death, "and I will spare the child." "Of course," said Macario, "but first I have two questions."
"Ask your questions."
Holding the bottle high and seeing that the liquid was almost gone, Macario asked, "What is in the bottle?"
"Your life's blood, Macario," said Death.
"And what is life?" said Macario.
"A dream," said Death. "Life is a dream."
Macario's wife was worried when he did not return from eating his turkey. She put the children to bed early and, wrapping her shawl around her shoulders, went to find Macario. His secret place was not so secret after all. She knew where he would be, and there she found him, lying dead at the base of the tree trunk, a half-eaten turkey beside him, and a turkey bone caught in his throat.
That is a stunning story.
And isn't that a wonderful story?
Yes.
And I've heard that. The part about death and making a deal with the person. Use this potion, and if I'm at the foot of the bed, the person will live. If I'm at the head, the person will die. And it goes on and on and on like that. And has a similar ending, but I like the way this ending is. Because up until the very last three lines, all the adventure and saving people's lives and everything is children becoming well-educated and traveled and all this stuff. It's all a dream.
What I find so stunning is that there are at least 3 points, maybe more points in the story when you think you know how the story is going to end. And it doesn't. It goes on and on.
Yeah.
With all these twists and turns.
It reminds me also of a Jack tale, a version of a Jack tale that deals with death. That has a different ending completely, but fascinating. I'm so glad that Tim Tingle gave me this book.
That's wonderful. So are Tim's stories in there?
No, this is a collection of ghost stories, Texas ghost stories.
And wow.
There were 50 favorites for the telling, Tim Tingle and Doc Moore.
So did he give that to you this last week or when he was here?
When we were at the school in Ranson
and
he was performing, he had some books out. And his friend Bill, who travels with him, said that he always gives a copy of each book to the school library, you know, that he signs and things. And so I was looking at the books, and I bought one of his books. And he said, "Oh, you can't have just one. Here, this one. Here, here's the." So I bought one book. He gave me two more. I've read a number of these already, and they're fascinating. And as I mentioned before, Mr. Fox is in here. And the ending is different, much different in this version of Mr. Fox. And even some of the description, though it's
it's the basic, what they call the bones of the story is the same. A lot of the details are explained differently. And I really like the story of Mr. Fox. So I'm going to work on this one to tell this version, because I like the ending is really much worse than the... I know.
Okay, you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. Thanks for joining us. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasio Pioska.
And I should probably talk about the Stories in the Round series right now. I have so much I could say, but I will only say that our next teller, coming up November 25th, just before Thanksgiving, is Mitch Capel. Very funny guy. He has promised to do some Paul Laurence Dunbar, but also a number of other things. And he's probably going to be, well, I'm not sure if he's going to be Granddaddy Junebug much during this performance. I did have a phone conversation with him just the other day, and we got sidetracked, so I kind of lost track of the thread of the conversation. I usually get sidetracked when I'm talking to Mitch Capel. Anyway, he's a great storyteller. I've heard him tell three different times. He often MCs liars contests and other types of storytelling events, and he is worth going to see just as the MC. Not, he doesn't even have to be telling stories to be mesmerizing and entertaining and teaching us things that we all need to know about human beings. And then December 23rd, Fanny Crawford will be telling stories at Stories in the Round, and I do not know what she will be telling. She has not shared that information with me so far, but I hope everybody comes.
By and December 22nd, she'll know.
Yes. Well, we hope so. That's on December 23rd. And hopefully in a little bit, we'll be able to tell you more about the series for season 7, the 2020 schedule. Working on that, but don't have it pulled together yet. You can get more information by calling me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638. Or email Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com.
There you go. I was thinking, and you mind if I make an announcement? About
Please
this?
Do.
Coming up on Sunday, November 3rd, I will be in Leesburg, Virginia, at the Rust Library, telling science stories.
He will be?
Yes.
Okay. Stasz Silkowski will be.
Yes, I will be.
I love this, referring to ourselves in the third person. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to start a story because I don't know how long this story is. This is also from a book. This is from Mountain Ghost Stories and Curious Tales of Western North Carolina by Randy Russell and Janet Barnett. And this one is called...
Sorry. I just realized something. You have to go south to get to Western North Carolina.
Yes, you do. This one is called Hannibal Heaton, Here's a Hoot. There are some wonderful stories in this book, some very scary stories. This is one of the few that's short enough for me to tell on the air, but it has a number of elements in it that I just love, and we can talk about that if there's time at the end. General Wade Hampton was still alive when Mrs. Heaton, who loved the place she lived, changed herself into an owl. Confederate General Wade Hampton, governor of South Carolina from 1876 to 1879, and later a United States senator, built High Hampton Inn in 1850 on his 2,200-acre estate just southeast of Cashiers in Jackson County. Known as the Giant in Gray, General Hampton spent his summers at High Hampton until his death in 1902. Now, General Hampton's nephew was Dr. William S. Halsted, chief of surgery at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. In the 1890s, Dr. Halsted was looking for some land for a summer estate and a retirement home, and he decided on a place known as Heaton Field and promptly made an offer of $1,600 to the owners, Hannibal Heaton and his wife, Louisa Emily. The Heatons were a recognizable couple. Hannibal was short and sported a long red mustache that covered his mouth. Louisa was pretty. It was said her hair turned white while she was still in her 20s because it looked good that way. They had that kind of aura, that kind of luck. The Heatons had always been known as a happy couple. But Hannibal wanted to sell. Mrs. Heaton did not. Hannibal found convincing her to go along with the deal was like herding a train of elephants over the Alps. Some people make a different resolution every year. Others make the same resolution year after year and never keep it. Mrs. Heaton resolved to stay on their land near High Hampton. In fact, she told Hannibal that if he sold, she wouldn't leave. She would just hang herself from the tree out front, and that would be that. Now, Dr. Halsted, who wanted to buy this place, never imagined all the trouble this would cause. Hannibal Heaton did not believe his wife meant what she said. He thought she was only being stubborn, and that sooner or later, things would go his way. So Hannibal had the deed drawn up and turned it over to Dr. Halsted. But word of that transaction got home before Hannibal did. And driving his wagon into the yard that evening, long after dark, he saw a ghostly figure hanging from a rope tied to a branch in the front yard. It turned out to be Louisa. Hannibal should have listened. With a sorrowful heart, he climbed the tree, intending to cut down his wife's body, but something kept him from it. Perched directly above Mrs. Heaton's body on the branch, the rope was tied to a huge white owl. The night bird screeched at Hannibal as he reached out to cut the rope, forcing his withdrawal. The owl stayed. It proved so stubborn that Hannibal went inside to get his shotgun, taking aim at the large bird, easily visible even in the darkness. Hannibal could not squeeze the trigger. That bird was the same color as his wife's hair, and there was something in its eyes that reminded him of Louisa. That white owl upset him so that Hannibal had to drive to the neighbors to get their help in removing his wife from the tree. His mustache turned a light gray that night, and from then on, Hannibal spent his time fidgeting with his hands, chewing his mustache, unable to focus his eyes in one direction for more than a second or two. Everyone agreed this nervous condition was brought on by the death of Louisa. Yet Hannibal did not believe his wife had died. He insisted that the white owl that refused to leave the tree was Louisa, and nothing could convince him otherwise. The owl sat on its branch outside his window every night, and its haunting hoo, 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 filled the house. Mrs. Heaton was buried in Zachary Cemetery, and on her tombstone was inscribed, "She was ready to every good work," unquote. Hannibal could have remained in the house until the following summer when Dr. Halsted would take possession, but the widower Heaton disappeared within a week of the funeral, and no one has heard of Hannibal Heaton since. But the people in High Hampton still hear from Mrs. Heaton. The original High Hampton Inn was destroyed by fire in 1932, but was rebuilt that same year. High Hampton is now a resort that provides refuge for owls especially one large white owl with bright blinking eyes. They say this white owl sometimes can be seen in the evening near the inn as it hunts from perches among the trees and shrubbery.
Freaky. That's good. I like that.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for owls, especially vengeful owls.
Hmm. Well.
Well, I have another owl story that I thought of last night as I was falling asleep, and I'm not sure I can remember all of it, but I think I can remember enough to make it spooky. I went to camp for 7-8 years of my life, from the time I was 7 years old till I was 14. When I started out, I was just going for 2 weeks at a time. By the time I was a teenager, I was spending the whole summer there, except for the last 2 weeks of August when we went on our family vacation. And I loved that camp, obviously, if I kept going back year after year after year. And I learned a lot there. I met a lot of interesting people. Heard my first ghost stories there. One of the stories that I heard was always associated with a campout trip that every child who went to camp there experienced. This was a Quaker-run camp called College Settlement Farm Camp outside Philadelphia, Horsham, PA. And we'd camp out overnight with our blanket rolls and our marshmallow sticks and hot dogs for dinner at least once every 2 weeks. So it happened, if you stayed all summer, you got to do this several times. And it would, the place, the day camp where we had our campouts had lean-tos lined up at one end of a huge field, and that's where we would sleep, inside the lean-to. So it didn't matter if it was raining, and it would have to be storming and lightning for them to cancel the overnights. But just behind the lean-tos began some woods, a pretty substantial forest, mostly evergreens, pines, but lots of other stuff in there. And one of the stories that they always told was about the time Alice, who was a camper before my time, when I first started at camp, she was an older teenager. So I knew who she was. I had met her. And she probably knew who I was because I'd been going there all my life. So, but when she was she was probably 14. She was a counselor in training too for a couple of years. So she might have been 15 or 16. But when we went on these campouts, we were, of course, supposed to stay in the lean-to. We were absolutely forbidden to leave the lean-to in the night. If you had to go to the bathroom, for example, you had to wake a counselor who would accompany you to the bathroom house or the rest. I don't know what we called it. It was a concrete building some distance away from the lean-tos. You couldn't just get up and go in the woods. That was not permitted. But Alice had gone for a walk in the woods one night with a friend without permission, which she apparently was wont to do. That was one of the reasons I liked her. She was willing to break rules. She was a good girl. She could not have become a counselor if she didn't have a reputation for doing the right thing in the right circumstances. Yet, she occasionally got away with almost murder because when they went for this walk in the woods, they kept hearing an owl. And so they were drawn to that sound. And they stood under a very, very tall tree in a grove of pines, looking up at this, where they thought the sound was coming from. And they were there for more than 5 minutes, just staring up at the tree and talking quietly to themselves. And suddenly, this huge monster came swooping down through the trees and claws out. It was an owl with a wingspread of perhaps 6 feet, according to the story. It was a huge owl. And it came claws first at her face. And apparently, what had happened was that there was a nest of half-grown owls above them in the trees, and that's what they were attracted to. And when the mother owl returned, or the parent owl, it went right for them. And they fought the bird off, but they were terrified and they were injured. They had not at the face. They had but they had gashes all over their arms. They were bandaged. Their arms were bandaged for more than a week. It was a scary story, as you know. I heard it like as a 10-year-old, something like that. And the nature counselor and several men went out with guns and got that owl. Now that's the, I don't like that part of the story because there were baby owls still in the nest. Now I don't know how soon they went after that owl. They might have let the babies grow up long enough to be independent, but they did get the owl. And so the ending of the story is that they had the owl stuffed.
Ooh.
They took it to a taxidermist and had it stuffed with arms, with wings outstretched, and mounted it near the tree that Alice had discovered that she was standing next to when the owl attacked. And after that, they would take these two counselors. So this, I'm guessing this was not a Quaker administrator sanctioned activity, but it was part of the ghost story tradition for these counselors. And so Alice herself was taken for a walk in the woods, ostensibly to show the other campers where she had been attacked. And they took her a roundabout way so that she was as shocked and frightened as everybody else when she saw the owl swooping down, the dead owl stuffed swooping down from the trees. And of course, when I saw that owl, it was terrifying to me because we had already heard the story. So that's one of my camp stories.
That's great. know, we could do more of these stories next week.
Oh, we could.
I think.
Well,
that
way, okay.
Sandwich
Halloween?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we'll do Day of the Dead stories next time.
Because sounds good. And we still have a little bit of time.
We do.
I'll tell you a little story, short story, that has a kind of a interesting ending. I lived in Baltimore as a young person, and a family I knew had a son that went off to Korea and was only there a short while and was reported missing in action. And that happened at the beginning of the month of December 1950. About 5 weeks after this family was notified with that report, the wife of the soldier, wife of a Marine, received a phone call, and a young man said he had been stationed in Korea with her husband, and he had been wounded, terribly wounded, and had been flown back to the United States. And he was in the hospital, and he wondered if he could come and see her when he was given some time to be released. It turned out that it was about 2 months later that she agreed with him that he could come and see her when he was able to leave the hospital. He was in intensive care for a long time. When he did come to see her, he wanted news of her husband, and she said, he's dead. And say in the interim, those couple of months, she had been notified that he was killed, actually on the day that he was reported missing. Well, the man from the hospital, who was a young Marine and was not going to be going back into combat or anything else. He was terribly wounded. He was very shocked when he was talking to his friend's wife and said, I have something that I think I should show you, but and then he pulled an envelope out of his pocket, his coat pocket, and handed her three photographs that he had developed after he came home. And the photographs were so shocking to the young wife that she passed out, had to be sedated for a while, and when things were calmed down, there never was an answer about those photographs, but the photograph showed her husband in the first week of January 1951 standing by the gurney that the young Marine was on as he was being airlifted from Korea to the States. And there was verification of that photograph, and no one has been able to explain how that could be possible, since his body was, the military had said that his body had been identified and that he had been killed in a attack by a Chinese army who had swarmed the hill that the Marine detachment was guarding. And there were no survivors of that attack, but a couple of days afterwards, the Marines were able to recover bodies, and her husband's body was one of them recovered. That was on November 28th, 1950. The picture that the young man who came home to Baltimore with the terrible injuries was taken the first week of January 1951. The Marines and the military part of the government had no explanation at all how that could be possible.
That's quite a story. Wow. Great ghost story. I'm a little rattled. Okay. Yes. We are out of time.
We are.
Now. So, thank you, Stash. That was quite an interesting story. Take us out.
I don't have my paper. Oh. But we have been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. Enlightenradio.org. And you can hear other broadcasts that we've done in the past 2 years or so at talltales.enlightenradio.org. And there are tales with Fanny Crawford and Stash Ziolkowski.
Your co-hosts.
Right. So the Storytelling Hour is brought to you from Bolivar, West Virginia, and offers listeners a window into this world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening.
Hope to see you next Monday.
And going
hear you.
The theme of this broadcast, who knows what's coming up next?
Ooh, ooh, ooh.